Okay.
I'd like to begin like we did last week, begin and end with a discussion relating to the Parsha. Rashi at the end of the Parsha, when describing the sockets that were used to support the walls around the chatzer, has a suffix. Ve'eini yodea im tchuvim ba'aretz okshurin v'tluyin v'kavdam machbet shipulei hayirios shelo yanu beruach. So what supported them? I'm not sure, he says. Were they basically tied, or so that just the weight would hold them, or were they actually pegged into the ground, and that's the reason why they were able to be supported? In other words, how did the walls stand? Very last pasuk. So I heard in the name of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he asked, my nafkamina, who cares? Who cares? Was it the weight? Was it a peg? Does it make any difference? In other words, there's no nafkamina lahalacha. This was a shaila for the Mishkan. Oh, you see, you have it in front of you. Okay, look at that. So tell me if I'm saying it over right. So I actually never saw it inside. This is what I heard. So what I heard is he answered that it's maybe a nafkamina L'inyan binyan b'shabbos, in terms of, we know the halachos of binyan and ohel are derived from the Mishkan. What would be considered an ol kavua, which is an iser d'oraisa, if something just stands due to the weight, would that be sufficient, or would it need to be pegged into the ground? Good. That's the vart. So the question I have is the question a good question? In other words, maybe the answer is that there's value to figuring out how the Mishkan stood, regardless of whether there's a nafkamina or not. We study the Mishkan in detail because we want to understand what happened. And it's in the Torah, and it's a pasuk, and it's a word in the Torah, and we're trying to figure out what actually happened. And maybe figuring out what happened, maybe knowing what happened, is valuable in its own right. So, to address this question, I want to take a step back and consider the value of studying history. Is there a value in studying history? Is there a value in knowing what happened? In this particular case, we're wondering about whether there's a value in knowing how exactly the walls of the Mishkan were supported. So that's the question. That's the question I want to think about with you. So, take a look at your source sheets that I gave you last time. Start with an interesting Makor. It's on the page 2, left column. This is from the Hakdama of the Rambam to Perek Achelah. So, if you recall, the Mishnah over there said, Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelak L'Olam Haba. And then it said, Ve'elu Shein Lam Chelak L'Olam Haba. And one of the people that didn't have a Chelak L'Olam Haba, according to Rabbi Akiva, is HaKorei B'Svarim HaChitzonim. So the Gemara asks, what exactly is included in Korei B'Svarim HaChitzonim? So the Gemara answers, this is in Sanhedrin Kufam Beis, Tana B'Sifri, B'Sifrei Minim, it's talking about heretical work. Rav Yosef Amar. So heretical works, we understand why it's very bad to read them. Maybe we'll talk about another time. It's always us, or if it's ever mutter. But certainly, we understand the problem with Sifrei Minim. Rav Yosef Amar, B'Sefer Ben Sira Nami Aser L'Mikri. Also Ben Sira. Amar Le'abaye Ma'itayma, Ilema Mishum De'Kasav Bey, Lo tintosh. Okay. Gilpna me adnei. Tolezel mashche lechavla. Alatzali yasei venura. Be'echul be'etart in Greek. Fine. Well, we don't have to read the whole Gemara, especially because they didn't put it on your sheet. So, the Gemara tells us you can't read Ben Sira, which is surprising, because the Gemara actually learns certain ethical teachings from Sefer Ben Sira. Ben Sira is a work sort of like Mishlei, not the same, but the same genre, and it wasn't included in Tanakh, written by Ben Sira. And the Gemara occasionally does actually quote Psukim from Ben Sira, learns ideas from Ben Sira. So what's so bad about studying Ben Sira? Why is it not in the... Why is someone who reads it doing such a bad thing? So let's look at the Rambam. Again, left column. Rambam writes, the Svarim HaChitzonim Amru Shehem Sifrei Minim V'chein Sefer Ben Sira V'hu HaYa'ish Shechiber Svarim Yesh Bahem HaTulim Me'inyanei HaKaras Panim Ein Bahem Tam V'lo To'elas El Ibud Hazman Behavel. So what's wrong with reading Ben Sira? It's a waste of time. There might actually be, you know, some nice things that are there, but overall, it's bitul Torah. It's a waste of time. Kigon, Eila hasvarim hanimtzaim etzel ha'arav misipur divrei hayamim, like these Arabic history books or chronicles, vanhagas malachim, michusei haraviim, visipuri hanigun. I guess the Rambam wasn't so into music. These are books. They don't have really wisdom in them. They don't have to'elas gufani, you know, maybe a medical book, so you'll know how to be healthy or help other people. El ibur azman bilvad. Now, agav, this is very remarkable that bitul Torah is so chamor. And according to Chitzonim, ain lo chelik olam haba. So chamor. So the Rambam, now it's another shmooze, but the Rambam expresses this idea in many places, actually, regarding Avodah Zarah. He says it in terms of why Misachik Bekuvia, in the Perashah Mishnayos and Misach HaSanhedrin, he says, what's so bad about Misachik Bekuvia? He says, because you should go ahead. No, doesn't. That's maybe Mishatari says that, but that's not what he says to Pesach Shnayas. No, he says because everything in your life, every pursuit, should be towards one of two ends: either making yourself a better person, chachma and the like, or making the world a better place. And gambling, and it's lav dafka gambling, according to this, is playing games, right? Doesn't do either of those. It doesn't make you a better person. It doesn't make the world a better place. And certainly if it's going to be your profession. Basically, what's wrong with gambling? Why you pasul eidus? It's a waste of time. That's what he says. Now, just to maybe to clarify, now we're not going to get into it now. The pshat isn't that an onesh for wasting time is loss of olam haba. That's not what the Rambam means. What the Rambam means is that someone who does not value their time, so they would use their time for silly things like reading chronicles, reading Sefer Ben Sira. Someone who doesn't value their time, so that's a major pagam. In other words, there's something really messed up about a person who doesn't appreciate that they're on this world for a short time, for a reason, with the ability to accomplish something, such that every moment of life is so precious. And if you then spend your days engrossed in things that have no utility or value, reading Divrei Hayamim, Chronicles of Kings, so there's a major problem. Such a person is not a ben olam haba.
The Sefer and Tanakh.
No. He's talking about history chronicles. No, chas v'shalom. Okay. Right, exactly. Now, that's really not what I wanted to talk about today. What I wanted to talk about, though, is though it is what he says in passing. In other words, reading these history books, the Rambam says, is an example of a waste of time. So, is it important to know what happened? History books, after all, they do tell you what happened. Right? Why is the Rambam so prosed? So, to appreciate this, I'd like to look at a Gemara with you. It's a Yuma Hamad base, the next source. Ketzad Hilbishan. The question over here is when Aaron was dressed by Moshe Rabbeinu at the inauguration of the Mishkan, it's described in Parshas Tzav. How did he do it? So the Gemara asks, Ketzad Hilbishan, my Davi Havi, who cares? Who cares how Moshe dressed Aaron? Ela Ketzad Malbishan Latzad Lavo. Latzad Lavo Nami? Lakshiavo Aaron Uvanevo Moshe Mad. Ela Ketzad Hilbishan Lamizbar Kroi. So it's important to know how to teach the psukim. Pligi ba Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Yochanan, Chadamar Aaron, Vachar Kachbana, Vachadamar Aaron Uvanev Bivasachas. So the Gemara basically says, my dehave have, meaning to say, what happened, who cares? It is irrelevant, unimportant. No point in thinking about how exactly Aaron was dressed during the inauguration of the Mishkan. The Gemara says, however, if it's relevant to teach the Psukim, as we do have to know how to translate the Psukim, and therefore, if there's a nafgamin, that's not a nafgamin, if there's a understanding this question will help us interpret the Torah, then fine, then it's valuable, or certainly there's a nafgamin al halacha, or even gleaning the meaning from the Torah. But if not, so then there's nothing valuable in this. It's going back to the question that we started with, the Lubavitcher Rebbe's question on Rashi. Right, that's why he's asking that question. My dehave have, who cares? In other words, there's no nafkamin over there how to teach the psukim. So my dehave have, who cares? Why was Rashi wondering about this? That was the pshat in the kasha. Now we'll see in a moment that the scope of my dehave have is actually, I think, a machlokas rishonim in a number of places. But another place, for example, I think where you see the Gemara reflecting this idea, the Gemara asks in Shabbos, what was the aveira of the Mekoshesh? Right, the Mekoshesh ate him, did some type of aveira, Chil Shabbos, Yus Chayiv Misa, the Gemara asks what it was. So the Gemara asks the same question, Lemay Nafkamina, who cares? What difference does it make what he did? So the Gemara answers that question also. He says that it's a nafkamina lalacha. Nafkamina laderav, da'amar rav matzasi, v'chulei, avos malachos arban chasar achas, ve'no chayiv misa al achas, man, there's a malacha, you're not chayiv misa, which one is it? So it can't be the one that the Mekoshesh did. Okay, there's an answer. But again, fundamentally, the question of the Gemara is, l'may nafkamina. In other words, who cares what the Mekoshesh did? Why are you even asking the question? Now listen to this gra, fascinating gra. Which you have over, is these left columns and right columns get me so confused. It's on page 3, right column. We'll go back to the other ones. Lahavin mashal umelitza, v'achshav balavar anpei habina. Right, this is the beginning of Sefer Mishlei. He's explaining the psukim over there, which say lahavin mashal umelitza. Mashal umelitza shneim b'torah b'shevach sav. V'amashal u'sipurei ha-Torah. U'melitza hu ha-pnimi. So this brings us back to the discussion we began having at the end of last year. The mashal is the story in the Torah, and the melitza is the pnimius. In other words, the significance, the meaning of the story. V'tzach lavin shneim. So the pasuk tells us you have to know both. Shalolios makchish pshutei ha-sipurim. You can't deny what the stories seem to indicate. In other words, the stories of the Torah did actually happen, and you can't deny that. Avalios mamin osam kavayasam. You have to believe them as they took place. They're true. They're not just fables or symbolic ideas. The stories in the Torah took place. They're historical reality. Im shelo toil me'od yediyasam. Though the truth is, it's not very important. It's not very helpful to know what happened. D'may da'ave ha'ave. There we go again. May da'ave ha'ave. Whatever happened, happened. Aval de'osenu k'tsaros melahasig to'elas p'shutayin. In other words, there's omek to the stories, and omek could be true at many layers and levels. But that's why we study the stories. In other words, there's no particular value in studying the stories just to know what happened, to know history. Because when it comes to history, mai dehave have. Rather, we have to understand the meaning and the message and the ideas. That's very valuable. So you do need to know what actually happened, the Gra says, but only because you have to know. Really, the value emerges from understanding them. Just an interesting ha'ara, if you go back to the previous page, an interesting machlokas, I think. Oh, I gave that Gemara on Shabbos. It's here, the Lamai Nafkamina by Mekoshesh. Of another place where I think perhaps to some degree you might see a machlokas Rishonim, but my Dehave Have, it's in Chulin Yadzayin. By Rabbi Yirmiyah, Eivari Basar Nechira Shechnisu Yisrael Iman La'aretz Mahu. Right, what's halach? We know it's a machlokas. What type of meat was permitted in the midbar? You could ask about that also. But there's nafkaminas there too. So what happens if there was basar nechira, right? Meaning, say basar that wasn't shechted, that according to one opinion was mutter to eat in a midbar, and they brought it into Eretz Yisrael. So the shaila is, does it become aser now that they're mitzvah and shechita, or no? Since it was mutter, doesn't like poof become aser. If they were to do this in Eretz Yisrael, it would be Aser, but now it's still Mutter. That's the Gemara Shaila. So Rashi's bothered by the question, who cares? Says Rashi, Drosh v'kabal schar. Hu shetzrichen anu lamod al emes v'afal pishekvar avar. It's interesting. Rashi sounds like this is an important question, even though there's no nafkamina. The Rush asks on Rashi, says, I don't understand, v'lo nihira li. The Dafka Lamizbar cried Arshina Nafal Pishekvar Avar. As we saw the Gemara answer, Lamai Dave Have, who cares? So if it's relevant to Taich the Psukim, that's important. Aval, Likvawa Baya Bishas, Bidavash Embo Tzorach Lo Ashkechan. We never heard of such a thing. So the answer is no, there is a Nafkamina, skipping a little of an air, lead a Nafkamina by Yazu, Dereb Yermia, Ladim Shasar Atzmo Beachad. Okay, nafkamina is if you assert something for a particular period of time and then that isser expired, but something that was once usser, what would it be mutter? Fine, comes up with a chapi nafkamina. Maybe this is, you see a machlokas between Rashi and the Rush about the gedder of Maida Avehave. There's another interesting thing, I don't really want to go into it either, but there's a machlokas we showed him in a number of places in Shas when the Gemara seems to have questions that don't seem to have particular importance. So the Rishonim ask, you know, might have a have. So some Rishonim basically give answers. They come up with nafkaminas that, like, very, very far-fetched nafkaminas, you know, like when you're a kid. So somebody declares a hakira. And then somebody says, "L'may nafkamina?" And he says, "Oh, if you're mekadesh and isha al menas, right?" So the truth is that some Rishonim give that answer, more or less. The Meiri, it's a discussion in a number of places. The Meiri and the Yad Rama discuss this in Sanhedrin Tesvav on the base. Is that a good answer? It's not. So some Rishonim say no, because if that's nafkamina, then you just undid the whole nafkamina, the whole shayla of ma'id havi, right? So I'll say, oh. Nafkamina Ketz El Bishan is if a person is Makadish Anisha Al Manas. That, right? So others try to find how the Nafkaminas that the Rishonim give that seem to not be particularly important actually do reflect conceptual questions. And basically, overall, what we find in the Gemaras and the Rishonim is that we don't care about what happened Be'etzem. So we only care if it's A, important to understand a pasuk, B, maybe teach us a lesson, C, teach us some conceptual understanding. In other words, if you have a chakira, it's a good chakira, doesn't really matter if there's a nafkamina or not. Just a lot of times, chakiras are two ways of saying the same thing, and you need a nafkamina to highlight that, in fact, these are two different stadim. But one way or the other, we have this concept of my dehave having. I'd like to, yeah.
I think these one sheets are by Nirei Dachas, that's a mirror, and by Tzaras.
No, so that's totally a different point, as the Rishonim there and the Achronim point out. Drosh v'kabel schar is a very different idea. Drosh v'kabel schar means that you learn very important lessons from it, even though there's no practical application. In other words, maybe due to various technicalities, according to one opinion of Gemara, we happen not to ask in that way, but according to one opinion of Gemara, there is no practical possibility of ever having a ben sur mar. So the Gemara asks, so what's the point? And the Gemara answers, drosh v'kabel schar. So what are you supposed to darshan? The answer is you learn very important lessons from Ben Sora Mora. You learn about Yarda Torah L'Sof Da'ito Shel Adam and what's going to happen, and you learn all sorts of things. You know, somebody recently was hacking me about the Torah's view on marijuana. So I mentioned to them Rav Moshe's tshuva, who derives from the Parsha Ben Sora Mora, that it's usher. Okay. It's a bigger discussion, but just as a mushel, right? In other words, we learn how to deal with things like addictions and taiva and the like from the Parsha of Ben Sora Mora. They're tremendous things we learn. So that's what Drosh V'Kabel Schar means. Drosh V'Kabel Schar means that there's no practical application, but they're very important lessons to learn. Whereas going back to the question of Ketzad Hilbishan, where the Gemara does ask the Shail of Ma'ida Habehave, the answer of Drosh V'Kabel Schar doesn't work, because what am I going to learn from that question? So if you could answer, then you have an answer, right? And that's what we see, right? You could learn a lesson. You could learn, like the Gemara said, you could learn from every story. There are ideas, there are lessons, there are meanings. But the shape of the Adonim, or the order of Halbashas Aron, there doesn't seem to be anything that really affects me that I could learn. It just seems to be a historical question, and if that's the case, my dabe habe.
By lucky shayla, even if it's anything impossible, learning what that lucky is in the case, is it somehow?
No, because it's impossible.
That's
not
the case.
No, I don't think you could say that, but I don't think that's correct. In other words, if it's a halacha, there has to be. It's not halacha if there's no practical application ever. If there's no such thing as ben sora mora, then ben sora mora is not a halacha.
Even it's a technical thing.
What?
It's a technical thing.
But once it's impossible, it's impossible. Okay, I a lot of questions. I think let's try to understand this better. Maybe then we'll see if we can if we've answered your questions. Let's try to dig a little deeper. And Lina Adler will take the questions. The Zohar, I think, expresses this idea in a very powerful way. And really, this is something that very much affects how we learn everything we learn, especially when we learn Chumash. It's the Zohar, top right of page 3. I realize now that I didn't give you the whole thing. Maybe I'll read a little more, but we'll start with what we have. An incredible idea. Deha oraisa dii klala ila af algav denafak mana chad sipor be'alma vaday lo asi l'schaza alahu sipor ela l'achza'a milin ilayin v'razin ilayin v'lo lilmod al atzmo yatza Ela lelamed ala klal kulo yatza. Begain dahu sipur da raisa. Oh, hahu uvda. Af algav du nafka michlala de oraisa. Lav lachza al garme nafak. Bilvad. Ela lachza alahu klala ilaa da'iraisa kula nafak. Kigon, haidechsiv. Vatana chateva b'chodesh hashvi'i v'shivasar yom l'chodesh al harei ararat. Vadai haikra mechlala da'iraisa nafak. V'asi b'sibur d'alma ma'ich paslan ishari b'hai o b'hai. Dehaba asar chad lishri, ela lelamed ala klal kulo yata. Vizakain inun Yisrael, disyoiv lehu oiraisa ila, oiraisa dikshot. So the Zohar is saying that everything in the Torah and every detail in the Torah is teaching us something important. And therefore, when you encounter a detail in the Torah that seems to be unimportant, irrelevant, not teaching me anything, then you have to dig deeper. You have to figure out why this is here and what it's teaching us. So, for example, the Pasuk tells us where the Teva rested, on Harei Ararat. Who cares? I don't even know where Harei Ararat is. But let's see, even I know. Let's say I went to Turkey, that's what they say it is, and I found a sign, this is Har Ararat. Great. Who cares? From a historical perspective, it's very important, very interesting. Where did the Teva land? That's an important thing to know if you're studying the history of the Mabul. But the Zohar says that the Torah is not a history book. And if the Torah told us a detail, it must be here to teach us something deeper. That happens to be, by the way, that's why, and the Zohar tells you what it is, we'll read on in a minute, but that's why you'll find that in Sifrei Kabbalah, there's tremendous arichus on the parts of the Torah that seem to be totally irrelevant. Dafka, the irrelevant parts. Because they have no significance, al peep shot. All sorts of things. Tells me the lineage of Esav, right? Or where the Teva landed, or the like, right? So, most stories, you know, the stories of Avram and Sarah, so I understand why they're very, very valuable, even on a level of shot. There's also value in a level of sod. But when it comes to certain parts of the Torah, many parts of the Torah, that seem to be basically useless information, so then dafka there, you have to appreciate that there's something much deeper going on and figure out what it is. I want to make a diuk over here, which is, the Zohar points out, this is true, because it's oraisa ilah, and Oiraisa de Kashat. Because the Torah is holy. That I understand. In other words, there's nothing particularly holy, at least at first glance, in knowing that the Teva landed on Harei Ararat. But what does it mean? It's Kashat. Kashat means true. Right? So it's true. Right? The Zohar is saying, it's not true. If all there was you know, the Teva landed on Mount Ararat, that's not true. It's a chisaron in emes. But what, if it's true, it's true. There's no chisaron in emes. I understand it's a chisaron in meaning, in deeper meaning, in holiness. But we'll read on in the Zohar. We'll see. He says it even stronger. We want to understand that. But let's read on a little bit before. Uman de amar hu sipura de oraisa leschaza alahu sipur bilvad kasi. So let's say somebody, you know, they're not such a mikubo. They say, that's not a good question. The reason why it said that the Teva landed on Mount Ararat is so we know where the Teva landed. That's it. Don't be such a chacham. Someone who says that, tipach ruche. Whoa, that's very strong. Why? Why so harsh? Because they're not understanding what the Torah is about. In other words, if your answer is it's there because the Torah just tells us stories and it is, gives details and it's telling history, so you're missing the point of the Torah. You're looking at the Torah as history. My dave ave. That's not important. Who cares? My dave ave. So someone's answer to that question is, yeah, that's part of the story. Similar to what we saw last week when we saw the Zohar that talked about how people look at the Torah as mili dehadyota, right? Fables. Diachi, because if it was true, if it was true that the Torah was just telling you a fact as part of the story, lav ihi oiraisa ilah, then it would turn out that the Torah isn't a holy Torah, oraisa to kashut, and it's not a true Torah. Elevadai oraisa kadisha ilah ihi oiraisa dikshot. Unbelievable.
Why isn't it a new Torah?
Because, so here's the yisod that we're getting at, right? If you look at truth as simply factual, so then as long as it's factual, it's true. So how is the Zohar saying what does truth mean? Truth is not factual, it's significant. It's meaningful. It's real in a deeper sense. So a book that tells you factual information, but nothing meaningful, nothing real, nothing deeper, is not just something that's not just a book that's not holy, but it's a book that lacks in MS. Read on in the Zohar. This is the part I forgot I cut off for you. I'm sorry, I didn't give it to you. Tachazi, Melech Masvedam, Lav Yikra Dilehu Lishtai Melech Tehadyota, Kol Shekein Lemichtav Leh. Right? In other words, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu had nothing better to do than include in his Torah these details, inconsequential details, so that's a pegam in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? If I read a book, and this book is a book about the history of 19th century whaling, and it goes into great detail, hundreds of pages, like Moby Dick, but without the story, right? Hundreds of details and details about how they whaled 200 years ago. All the details are true. So, what does that tell me about the author? Right? I'm thinking, who would spend years writing a book about 18th century whaling? Tells me he's a very small-minded person who's interested in unimportant and irrelevant details. He can get caught up in frivolous things and occupy himself with matters of no meaning for years. I might think he's a very bright person, a good historian, a good investigator, right? He went diving to pull up old whale boats. I don't know what, right? But that's, it tells me, the person, the author of that book is a very small person. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lahavdil, can write something like that, so that paints a false picture of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in that sense, it's Sheker. If the Torah, the Zohar says, includes in it the words of Hagar, the words of Laban, the words of Bilam, the words of Balak, there must be something deeper. It says, listen to this, right? If that were true, if in other words, if these details in the Torah were just details, like the whaling history, Iachi, amai ikri toiras emes, toras Hashem temima, edus Hashem ne'emana, pekudei Hashem yesharim, mitzvah Hashem bara, yiras Hashem tohoira, mishpatei Hashem emes, hanachemadim izav umipaz rav. If there's a word in the Torah that isn't nechmad mizav umipaz, so then you're missing the point. The Rambam writes, the next source, he says, and this is unbelievable, because right, he's including, this is from the Akdama to Parak Chelak. So he's writing over here, the Yud Gimel Ikari Emuna. Vayisoid Hashmini Hu Torah Min HaShemayim, right column of page 3. Torah Min HaShemayim. Good. So we all know what Torah Min HaShemayim means, maybe. And he goes on, and skip to where it's bolded. And he emphasizes, El kol oy sheba yesh ba chachmos v'niflaos l'mi shehevinu Hashem. Every letter of Torah, because it's min HaShemayim, because it's Dvar Hashem, kol os has chachmos v'niflaos. V'lo tusag tachlis ha-chachmasa arucha me'eretz mida urechava mineyam ve'en la'adam ela l'espalel k'moy David Mashiach Elokei Yaakov shespalel gal enai v'abita niflaos mitarasecha. Every letter of Torah, kol os sheba, has infinite wisdom. It's rechava mineyam. So what are we to do? Right? We read the pasuk. We read this week's Parsha, and it's going on and on about the details of the Mishkan, and we ask ourselves, who cares? Says the Rambam, what do we have to do? Ein la'adam elo l'spala. Gal einai v'abita nifla'os mitorasecha. Show me that chachma. I know it's there. Help me discover it. Help me discover it. That's the approach you have to take. Agav, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, I see it now, goes through all the places in Torah where it seems like the Torah is telling you irrelevant things, and has a theory for each one of them why it's there. It's in where is it? I wrote it down. I'll tell you later. If you can't find it, let me. Oh, yeah, 350. Chelakim Operka. Okay. So the Rambam Kedarko Bakodesh answers that question more nevuchim from a more nevuchim dika perspective. In other words, it's in Chelakim, so he's giving practical historical answers to the questions. But there's obviously more. Okay. So now, and this, by the way, one last point, then I'll take some questions, and then we'll try to get. But this explains why Ein Mukta Mumuchar BaTorah, right? In other words, if the Torah is about history, so then any history book should go in order. We go out of order because the goal is to convey meaning. And if meaning is better conveyed by going out of order, we would rather sacrifice chronology for meaning. And so, obviously, there needs to be a reason for going out of order. But once there is a reason, that principle of Ein Mukta Mulchar BaTorah is telling us that we always will prefer meaning over history of events. It's even more than that, to truth is. The Gemara Shabbos says, Kuf Tes Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara says, in the Parsha, it's talking about Vayibin Soharon, why it's out of order, right? It says that it's over there, because otherwise, if you'd have two Puranios in a row, Klal Yisrael become muchsok be Puranios. So the way the Ramban explains that is, if the Torah was written, in other words, the order of the Torah affects reality. So if the Torah is written in order such that we would have stories of Puranios, one following another, so that would make it muchsok be Puranios, ad kedei kach, that it would affect the reality, right? it would create that chazaka. In other words, the fact that it happened in Metzias doesn't create the chazaka as much as if it was written that way in the Torah. And that's why the Gemara says that lasad lavo shukola puranios betelin velo lo yidagu lepuranos v'yitzahara batel. So then the Gemara says asida parshazu sheteakar mikan v'tikase v'makomo. Right? In other words, it's not just that the Torah is written out of order to for some meaning. That's true also. It's pashup shot. But it's even more. It's that the order of the Torah affects reality. So if three stories of Puranios were written in a row, then Klal Yisrael would be muchzuk be Puranios, and we'd be toast. So memela, we have to be oker a parsha memakomo and put it somewhere else so that we won't become muchzuk, even though they happen that way. And memela lasad lavo, it'll be put back. That's the nun surrounding by Ibn Zaharo. All right. Yes.
There's a very big gap between saying that history is important and finding meaning in history versus saying that the color of someone's garments
good.
Are important.
Yeah, we're going to get there. Don't worry. Yes.
In terms of the Raya from Shabbos, it seems like it's kind of making the opposite point of Ein Mokdom Mokav Torah, because it's saying that this is a specific exception because we don't want to create a chazaka.
Yeah, that's one reason for Ein Mokdom Mokav Torah. That's why is this parsha written out of order? This is an example of Mokdom Mokav Torah for a reason. Sometimes, you know, the reason is there could be various reasons. In this particular reason, it's extraordinary.
Cause it's making the point that every time that it happens,
I don't know if that's true every time. That's an explanation for this instance of Ein Mokdom Mokav Torah, which is an unusual case, which is why, right, this is the only place where we say it's going to be put back in order later. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just blanked.
Okay.
Isn't the original meaning of the phrase, like that the Torah was written in the lashon of man?
Yeah.
There are certain times when it'll just be, like, use an expression of man.
I don't know if there's a couple of contexts where we use that idea of Dibur Torah Kalashon B'nei Adam. One is a machlokas in the context of drashos. In other words, is a certain diuk correct or not? Can an extra word or a letter or the like, is that the basis of a drash or not? Or would we say Dibur Torah Kalashon B'nei Adam? The Rishonim use it with respect to anthropomorphisms. I assume you're talking about the first example. I don't think that's relevant to this, because that's a question of lashon. That's a language question. Is a certain phrase or mode of speech, is it possible that the Torah uses lashon b'nei adam? Here, we're talking about a much more fundamental question. The fact that the Teva landed on Har Ararat is not lashon b'nei adam. It's a detail that teaches me nothing that could be omitted. Batana chateva. And just leave out the word location and continue. Take out those two words, right? Nothing would be missing other than a detail. That's not Lashem B'nei Adam. Yes?
If the concept of Drosh V'Kabbal Schar means that Lamaisa, there are lessons to be learned and things to be gained from learning these lachas, even though they might not ever come up in reality, why is the phrase Drosh V'Kabbal Schar? The phrase should be Drosh and learn, you know.
So it's interesting, Hara. Yeah, it's a good question. How do you understand Drosh L'Kabbal Schar? So the answer that I would say is that Schar, you're looking at Schar as almost arbitrary Schar. Like Schar, which is not connected to the Maisa that I did. The Rambam writes that the Schar of the Torah, it's always a natural consequence. The schar is it. It's not a separate schar. So it's not like I learned Torah, and because I learned Torah, I get brownie points. The schar of Torah is that I'm transformed into a different person. I'm an elevated person. I'm a kadosh person. I can better connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like the Rambam says, that's nitzchi. It's going to last forever. That's the schar. So the schar is that you, by learning this parsha, are going to be a better person. If you look at Schar the way you're looking at it, as like arbitrary remuneration,
because you could also say that
the answer is Rosh V'Kabel Schar, you're going to, what is the Schar of Torah? Every Torah, what is the Schar? You become a better person. You become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're going to act better. You're going to be deeper. You're going to connect. That's true here. Drosh the Kabbalah Schar here too. Just because there's no nafkamina doesn't mean that there's no Kabbalah Schar. There's no practical application, but there's still the same Kabbalah Schar.
I was understanding the Kabbalah Schar as, even if you say that it's directly connected to what you're doing, it could be that the pa'ula of learning Torah and but what you get out of that experience changes you as a person, but not necessarily the...
Good, that's what we're saying.
...of the content that you learn, in which case...
Well, how does it do it? It's just arbitrary pratim are details? I could be reading gibberish, but the process of reading it?
Meaning you don't have to be learning any particular lesson, how to act differently lebaisa, from what you're learning, but the fact that you are being osik, you know...
But how is being osik b'dvar Hashem? Good. That's what it means. In other words, the reason why being osik b'dvar Hashem is a transformative process is precisely because I am changed as a person as a result of that understanding.
True.
You disagree.
Not true. Learning b'dvar Hashem is inherently significant. We're learning b'dvar Hashem.
I agree, it's inherently significant. I'm asking why.
It could have been more refined, Dvar Hashem.
The Dvar Hashem is inherently valuable because of what it does to me. It's an interesting question. Is there some value in learning Torah without it? Shulchan Aruch HaRav writes that there is some value, for example, in Torah Shebichsav, not Torah Shebaal Peh, in reading it if you don't understand it. He says it's infinitely lower than when you do understand it, but he says the Ame Haaretz who study but don't understand, so there's something to that also. It is when it comes to Torah Shebichsav, it's a Chefza Shel Torah, and that too is a mitzvah. So I don't know if I want to say that there's no value, but I think the primary value is the way in which it affects us and brings us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by studying the Dvar Hashem. In other words, I certainly think it's inherently valuable, but what is the inherent value? It's because of what it does. Because it's... And therefore, we have to go ahead. And I think that's what all these makoros, and we'll see more in a second, are telling us. In other words, when you see something that doesn't seem to be teaching me something, I have to ask, my dehave have, right? Why do I need to know this? What is this teaching me? And that's a question that has to be answered.
The question might have a habit of saying, what's it teaching me? What's there to understand from it?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been so remote here in that class. We know what there is to understand from it, and we know in a practical sense, if it would ever come up, it never did come up, but we know what the halacha is teaching, we know what's coming out of what the Torah is saying. Might have a habit is a different question that this is just nonsensical, it's just ridiculous, it's a waste of time. So that's what all the person we're asking, might have a habit. We try to understand it. This is just something that doesn't lend itself to any understanding. Parsha Ben Sura Mora lends itself to understanding. It could have a practical application. It is conveying halachos. It will never exist. But learning it itself is inherently important.
I agree with everything you said. I fully agree. Now the question is, what does Drosh V'Kabel Schar mean? Now there's what when the Gemara answers that. So what's it saying? What does Drosh V'Kabel Schar mean?
As we
No. In other words, what's... So, all I was being Mosif, as I think, I believe some of the Mefarshim in Sanhedrin explain it this way, is that's the yesod of Drosh V'Kabel Schar. In other words, there's what to be learned from it, and therefore it's valuable. That's why you should do it. In fact, yeah, right back to that, in a sense, that's what the kasha, I think, of the Rush that we saw in Rashi is. Rashi answered, Drosh V'Kabel Schar, and then Rush said, how, right? This doesn't seem to be something about which I can learn anything. And that's why the Rush has to give an answer, right? In other words, the kasha of Drosh, the teretz of Drosh V'Kabel Schar is a good answer. Rashi said, Drosh V'Kabel Schar. The Rush asks, V'loy Nehira. Because what schar, what am I going to gain from knowing the answer to this question? And that's why the Rush asks, seemingly rejects Rashi, and he says, no, can't say Drosh V'Kabel Schar, you need a Nafkamina. Now, if there was a lesson to learn, so then that would be a fine answer. In that particular case, there's no obvious lesson to learn whether Sar Nechir is Mutter Kishenichnas Ularetz. So that's why the Rush says, I'm going to have to find a Nafkamina, which he does.
In this case, there's no halakhic nafkamina or anything to learn, so the Rashi needs to find a nafkamina. In a case like the Sotah Remorah, even if there was no lesson to be learned from the Sotah Remorah, the halakhic nafkamina, the Sotah Remorah
is a halakhic parashat. It's interesting, Shaila. I think the pashup shot is that according to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, Lo Hayah V'lo Nivra, so I understand if you want to say it's very unlikely Lo Hayah, fine. But how do we know it's never going to happen? In other words, or Yarni Dachas or the like, right? How isn't, I understand why I could say it never happened. And I could say it's so unlikely, you know, it's probably never going to happen. But how could I say it's not going to ever happen? And I think the answer is, that's the point. In other words, once it's impossible, so then you need to ask the question, why is it written? The answer is Drosh V'Kabel Schar.
This whole interpretation isn't the impression that I got from the Halakhic Man. I got the impression that he's saying that.
Right, deliberately saying differently.
Just understand the Halakhic system. That itself is value. It's its own world. And then whether or not that corresponds to reality.
Yeah. And Rav Tversky quotes Rav Chaim and shares sometimes, yeah. If someone asks what a nafkamina in a chakira is, apparently Rav Chaim used to say the nafkamina is pshat and the sugya.
Right, so that's what I said before, I agree to that. Because then if there's two concepts, I made that point explicitly, you don't need a, if these are two conceptually different approaches, then it's very important. You have to know how to learn the sugya. How do you understand the sugya?
Yeah. But so I think the difficulty is separating it from that
one
point.
Second. What's yes.
What do you mean by something to be inherently valuable for some other purpose? That it's inherently valuable because it must be something else? If it was inherently valuable, so that sentence ends there, inherently valuable. And if it's valuable because it enables you to be a better person or anything, so then it's valuable, but it's not inherent.
I guess that's a semantical point. Then I'm not using the word. So you're probably right. I'm not using the word inherently correctly. Then, it's valuable for what it does, whatever it does. Even if you say it the way, like in Halakhic Man, that's valuable. Yes.
The case of the Tana was said Kishem Shem Mekabel Schar Ala.
Prisha.
You get schar on refraining from it.
Well, that's Prisha. That's good. That's tremendous schar. He spent years and years darshaning every vav in the Torah, and then Rav Shimon HaMsuni says, I was wrong. That's unbelievable schar. What bikush emes could you have better than that? Okay. I think.
What does Rebbe think about what it says in
the Torah? I need to think about it. I'll think about it. Think about it. Maybe we'll come back to it next week. Could be. It's a different perspective. as it also says in Halachic Man, the perspective of Halacha Man is entirely non-this world oriented, and it's sort of the opposite of the Zohar, right? Totally, not just non-mystical, but not very, we'll talk about it. It's a good thing to spend more time on. The approach of Halachic Man, as the Rav says, is very, very different than certainly the approach of homo religiosus. That's the typology that he's contrasting it to. But it's even more than that. In other words, the Gemara says in Sukkah that davar katan is havayos davay v'rava, and davar gadol is ma'isa bereishis and ma'isa merkava. So how does Halachic Man understand that? So maybe we'll talk about it. We'll get back to it. I'm not the person to talk about Halachic Man, but maybe we'll get back to that. Is it different than what I'm saying? It's a good question. Let's go back though to my Davi Havi. Oh, we don't have time to get back to my Davi Havi. I'll leave you off with a question. And we'll something to think about over Shabbos. And I'll give you a marmukum to look at. The question I want you to think about is like this. In light of our discussion of Maida Havehave, how do we deal with, or what does, might this be a solution? There are many places where the Ramban al HaTorah, for example, we talked about differing perspectives last week between Pshat and Drash and Halachic realms. So in the narrative realms, the Ramban in many places goes ahead and tells you, this is what happened al pi Pshat, and this is what happened al pi Drash. And even about very fundamental things. In page 3 of your Makoros, you have a couple of examples. Here's one example, pasuk from Parshas Tzav. Zoyis HaTorah l'mincha, lo'ol l'mincha l'chatech l'asham l'miluim l'zevach ha'shlamim, asher tziva Hashem es Moshe behar Sinai, Biyom Tavaso as Bnei Yisrael, Akriv Eskar Bnei Ham Lashem, B'Midbar Sinai. So the Ramban says, what's the difference between Har Sinai and Midbar Sinai? First he tells you, Al Derech Rabosenu, Ki Kol HaMitzvos Namra L'Moshe B'Har Sinai, Kol Zein Pratosein V'Dikdu Kehem, V'Nishnu Ba'ol Moed, that's Midbar Sinai, V'Nei Mitzvos V'Yikro Shnuyos. According to Chazal, everything, all mitzvos, Pratosein V'Dikdu Kehem, were given at Sinai, and repeated at Ol Moed. Valderach Hapshat, Shiuro, Asher Tziva Hashem es Moshe Bahar Sinai, Uviyom Tzavoso es Bnei Yisrael, Bamidbar Sinai, Lahakriv Karbineim Lashem. In other words, some things were given at Har Sinai, and some things were given at Midbar Sinai. Right? So when were the details of mitzvos given? Har Sinai or Midbar Sinai? Says the Ramban, Al Pi Pshat one way, Al Pi Drash the other way. Another example, one other example you'll see in, I didn't put it here, so I won't even tell you. Okay, that's one example. I want you to think about, what does that mean for us? In other words, where did it happen? Or is it important to know? Like, why is the Ramban saying, it happened this way, Alpi Pshat, and this way, Alpi Drash? Well, what actually happened? Is that relevant? Or does that relate to my Davei Havei? That's one thing to think about. I'll think about Halachic Man. Second thing I want you to think about, this is an unbelievable vart. And relates, this is what I told you I was going to close with the Parsha. So I'm not going to really be able to close because we don't have time to read it. But I want you to look at the following. There's a letter from Rav Huttner. It's Igeres Lamed. And he talks about the building of the Mishkan and details that we might not know. A debate, for example, about the shape of the beams of the Mishkan, which we have in Chazal. Like, let's say two historians debated the shape of the beams of the Mishkan. And then we went ahead and we found, you know, we dug up the Mishkan, we found it, we dug it up, and we figured out who was right. So we'd say, okay, now, you know, the other historian was wrong, that one was right, and that's the end of the story. There's not much, you know, you'll throw out the other book. There are two books, competing books, what did the Mishkan look like, and you'll just, you may as well throw the one that was wrong in the garbage. Would the same thing be true with respect to the Machlokas Tanayim about the shape of the Krushim? Right, you know, in terms of the top, were they square on top or rounded on top? So that's something to think about. Let's take a look. He has a very interesting malach, and I think that also very much is going to shed light on our discussion. And Bezras Hashem, we'll pick up with this next week.
I'm just wondering, does anybody here know the post-Semitic about the